comics,
movies,
music,
video games,
technology,
Blu-ray,
television.
This is the HHWLOD Podcast Network.
Recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is
Abe. Hello.
Out Now is a film podcast that has Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We also bring in a little discussion about the latest movie trailers, box office results and predictions, a callback to past films similar to the main film of the week, games, and other fun stuff. As always, this episode of Out Now is brought to you by the HHWLOD Podcast Network, and this is episode 51, where we'll be talking about Wrath of the Titans. Release, not the Kraken. And joining us tonight, we have the managing editor for Film.com and co-host of the podcast, Brad and Laramie on Movies, and a man who will give us the over on Abe and the under on myself, Laramie Legal.
4-12.
Okay. Nice.
Is that good?
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's a good over for mine. How are you doing tonight, or today, tonight?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you gentlemen doing?
Doing quite well.
Too bad.
Glad to be bringing new guests onto the podcast. Always fun. Getting tired of that Jordan character, right, Abe? Okay, so let's see. A few announcements. For whatever reason, it took us 51 episodes, but we finally launched our own podcast dedicated Twitter feed. So there. Abe, what is
that? We're tweeting now, folks.
Yeah, follow us or stuff. Abe, what is that Twitter handle?
It is Out Now _ podcast.
Yeah, so we've already, you know, people seem to have been begging for it already since we have followers for that podcast handle, so that's good. But yeah, we're officially announcing it now. Out Now has its own Twitter handle. Like Abe and I have had our own, but, you know, we decided to make one dedicated to the show so people can you know, bag on us in 140 characters or less.
Yeah, exactly.
Hashtag.
We're all excited to get new forms of communication about hatred about us.
The achievement of a lifetime.
Let's see. Also, we're doing Wrath of the Titans this week, of course. And last week we released a Clash of the Titans commentary for the 1981 Clash of the Titans. If you have any desire to check out Clash of the Titans and for some reason listen to four of us talk about it, well, that's possible to do now. So it's out there. Go, you know. Some say you don't even need to watch the movie while listening to it. It's just us rambling about 1981 Clash of the Titans, but... It's certainly a step up from our Ghost Rider commentary, so there you go. our very popular Ghost Rider commentary.
Nicolas Cage is so dreamy.
Two more things. One, as always, iTunes reviews and ratings. Happy to get those. Really nice. Helps the show out. Easy to do. Simple. Couple clicks in iTunes. iTunes reviews and ratings. Nice. I'll keep mentioning it, because why not? And lastly, we had a contest last week for our 50th episode Spectacular. Right, Abe?
Spectacular indeed, man.
And it was a pretty simple contest. We just asked people to send in a couple things. The favorite movie that we reviewed on the show, their favorite movie that we've reviewed on the show. What we asked what our favorite movies were, and we asked what the most anticipated movies were for you this year, not including Dark Knight Rises. And we got a few emails. We said we would reward the three people that emailed in. The first entry would get the grand prize, which that person will get, and the other two would get some runner-up prizes. So I'll read the runner-ups right now. First up, we have Tammy Klein, and her most anticipated movie is The Avengers, and she loved our Muppets and Hugo episode. So congratulations, Tammy. You've won April.
Congratulations.
Yeah. I guess I can email you back, but you know, email us your address and we'll get something out to you. And of our other is Joe Jans. Joe Jans emailed in his favorite movie. We did a show about The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and he also really looking forward to The Avengers. So good on you guys. The grand prize winner is
drumroll please.
I'm glad there was a rim shot at the end of that. James Connor, you emailed in first, and not only did you email in, you gave us quite a nice email. We got your favorite movie that we reviewed was Drive. You answered our questions, and your most anticipated movies, you sent us five. You sent us a top five of these. Really made us go here. You got a Battleship, G.I. Joe, Retaliation, The Amazing Spider-Man, Prometheus, and The Avengers. So I'm certainly looking forward to most of those movies. But yeah. Not only that, he sent us a pretty complimentary email. That was really nice of him. But he also asked us a question, which all three of us can try to answer here. I'm going to read that question right now. Here we go. Let's see. Okay. Here's his question. With the increase in young adult novels being adapted into profitable movies, I see this becoming the next trend studios will run into the ground. Are there any books of that type that one time you would have liked to have seen, and do you think they could still work? Personally, I've always wanted the Ender's Game franchise to come to film, but now that it's finally in production, I don't see it being $160 million blockbuster because it may be 10 years too late and the tween audience might not be too familiar with the story. I'd like to hear the show's opinion, and thanks for the entertainment. Awesome. So thanks, James, for that question. And, you know, if anyone wants to, feel free to provide questions or any kind of feedback at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. You know, we've never really gotten a question before that's suitable to answer on the show. So, you know, I look forward to doing this more. But
it's mostly just hate mail.
Yeah, pretty much. But, guys, any answer to that question?
I've got a phenomenal one.
Yeah?
Ender's Game, I would have echoed. Like, I love Ender's Game. I love that whole series.
I agree.
That'll be doing great. But I would say the monster at the end of this book.
Ooh.
Bold, right? How are they going to do that in a movie? Think about it.
I would be curious. I'm trying to think. I'm like stirring my brain right now. It's like, how would that work?
But the question that James brought up, and I would like to see Ender's Game. It is in production, but at the same time, I'm kind of a little bit unsure about what's going to happen with that production too, because I like Ender's Game so much so that I don't really want to see Ender Wiggin on the screen as, you know, somebody I didn't see in my head. I don't know if that really makes too much sense, but it's just, I have him as a certain way in my head, and I like his voice in my head and everything like that. So to see him come alive, I think the person who's going to play him is Hugo.
Butterfield, yeah.
Right, yeah, and maybe it would be fine, but I hope that that franchise doesn't go belly up, because that book is really awesome. I really enjoy the book, and I don't really think that it's like a tween book at all. I think it's actually a little bit more just fiction, fantasy.
It's certainly assigned to schools to read.
Is it really?
Yeah, it was like a high school book for me it was on my like reading list when I was in high school to read, of like one of my options.
Really?
The book I chose, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that, because it's kind of violent. Yeah,
So is the Hunger Games.
Yeah, and so is, I guess, All Quiet on the Western Front. But I think that it is a genre that people are going to be looking toward more, especially with, like, the Hunger Games coming out, or, like, the Harry Potter series or anything else that's in a series.
I think you skipped one. Let me...
Is it Twilight? I purposefully skipped that one, Aaron. but if it is the case, I think that that's okay. I don't think that it's going to be something that ever really goes out of style. I think people are always adapting books into movies anyway.
Well, like popular book series like that one, or like a Hunger Games series. Like,
yeah. Or even like Aragorn or something like that, that dragon guy. Or How to Train Your Dragon. You know, people are always adapting books. It depends on how much they're willing to put into it, which is, I guess, what we talked about a couple of episodes ago when we were talking about The Lorax, which is just, you know, if they put enough care and time into it to make it a full, rich feature, then it should turn out just fine. And I don't think it's really going to be, quote-unquote, run into the ground per se. But that's just some opinions.
You mentioned the character not realizing what your image of him would be. That's kind of you got to get over it on that one.
No. Ender Wiggin is exactly how I picture him in my head. You can't have any other voice for Ender Wiggin, just like you can't have any other voice for Calvin and Hobbes, or Hobbes for that matter.
That said about Ender's Game, I guess, because I know, what's his name? Laramie, you know who's directing the Ender's Game movie? It's Gavin Hood. Gavin Hood.
Yeah, who I like, actually. Yeah, I like. I think he did Sotsy and Wolverine, right?
That's correct, yeah. And what's the other one? Was it Rendition?
Yeah, I think he's got some directorial skill. I don't think it's that difficult of a project to pull off either. Like, I think actually Hunger Games would be more logistically difficult than Ender's Game, because Ender's Game is set in just a couple of settings, right? I mean, it's not like they are CGI settings, but they're not as difficult, I would say, like conceptually as Hunger Games, which is the whole arena. One young adult novel I would throw out, it wasn't a series, it was just a standalone, but The Book Thief is really well done. I'd like to see that adapted into a film. People should read it, too. Why not?
The Book Thief, yeah. I haven't heard of that one.
It's a little Holocaust-y, but very good.
Oh, really?
Well, you know what they say. A little Holocaust-y goes a long way. So. I was still thinking about the monster at the end of this, but I was still racking my brain about that. See, now I'm thinking, well, if Jason Segel and Nick Stoller like decided to write a screenplay for it.
What about Everybody Poops?
That's a...
Or All My Friends Are Dead.
Here's a really weird one. I forget who was the guy who wrote all the sports books, but The Kid Who Only Hit Homers, I could see that as a totally weird horror adaptation. Because it doesn't make any sense that a child would only hit home runs, you know?
It'd be some kind of, some freak.
It's like Sammy Sosa. In
Matt Christopher.
Yeah.
And then what about, Dear Mr. Henshaw? Am I alone in that one? Only I read that?
All right, Mr. Henshaw.
Fair enough. You guys aren't big on Beverly Cleary. I see. See what kind of show this is. Bastards.
I thought The Martian Chronicles, actually, the Bradbury series.
Yeah.
It seems like that's due. That's due for Hollywood bastardization. But, back to Ender's Game. I know Gavin Hood's doing it now. I remember Wolfgang Peterson was attached for, the longest time to do that one. I think that had me more intrigued about seeing an Ender's Game movie. But with that said, knowing that an Ender's Game movie is finally in production, I'm more looking forward to that than not looking forward to that. I do like the story. I'd like to see what could come of it if it's in the right hands.
Isn't it, correct me if I'm wrong here, but isn't it considered kind of a religious book?
Ender's Game?
Yeah.
I guess you can, view it that way. I don't know if it's explicitly or something like, are you saying that it's kind of like a Land of the Witch and the Wardrobe kind of thing?
Yeah, I thought it was more of a Christian-focused book, and I didn't think that when I read it, but someone told me, oh, yeah, that's a big Christian book.
Really?
Oh, okay. So, I could be wrong. Sometimes I make stuff up.
When I read it, I didn't think that. No, I don't know. I haven't heard it, actually. I haven't heard it the same way I've heard, obvious ones, the C.S. Lewis comparison or something like that. But, yeah. Anyway,
question,
I think we spent enough time on this question completely unrelated to the show. So.
Oh, well, thank you for that.
Thanks, Jay. Yeah, thanks, James, for, doing the work for us, providing us with many to talk about. But yeah, James Connor, you did win the grand prize, which I'll repeat now. It is a 3D Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter poster, along with a couple, a selection of DVDs and some Blu-rays, just because had them lying around, so why not? So, and also Tammy and Joe Johns,
we didn't forget about you.
You got to run. Yeah, you'll get a runner-up prize. I'll find some scattered DVDs somewhere. You'll get some good. I got some in mind, actually. I think I know exactly what I'll go for. So, but cool. All right. So, with that out of the way, let's move on to Know Everybody, where each week you kind of ask each other a few questions and get to set the tone for this podcast episode and get to know everybody. So, I'll start.
Yes.
Abe, Sam Worthington shares a pretty similar look to Danny McBride in this film. Should the two of them star in an action comedy together as brothers, or maybe in a Twins remake?
Oh my god, Twins remake? I don't know about that. But that would be fantastic if they started an action comedy together. Because there were some times when I thought that he had... there were some times when I thought that he had a Kenny Powers mullet going on. But yeah, that'd actually be really cool.
Especially in the poster. The poster seems very apparent that it's did they just look at Eastbound and Down and be like...
I think that they'd have a really good time with it. Laramie,
yes.
You could hang out with a Greek god, who would you want to hang out with?
Very easy answer. Aphrodite. Bring it.
Trying to put the moves on Aphrodite.
Oh, she'd be into it, I think.
Yeah, you wouldn't really have to work for it with her. Like, if it was Artemis, she'd be... There'd be way more we gotta go get a, gotta go hunt something. And
go kill something.
Yeah, and come back. And if it was Athena, I mean, that's just a lot of head games. So.
Aaron.
Yes.
If you were faced off against a rock lava monster, what techniques would you use to beat it?
Well, I mean, the Medusa head thing seemed to work pretty well last time, so I'm not sure if they just, like, if there was, like a vault somewhere they couldn't get to Medusa head in time, or, like, Perseus is like, well, clearly nothing else is going to happen, so I'll just get rid of this thing, or...
That's the problem with Medusa heads. They're never there when you need them.
Exactly, yeah. It's a classic issue. Medusa head, where'd you go? So, let's see, rock lava monster... fight a paper lava monster and a scissors lava monster. Paper covers lava rock monsters.
Wait, I've got it. Rock lobster versus rock monster.
Oh, there we go. But see, man, now I need to get some B-52s going right now. My answer's rock lobster. Okay. All right. Larrabee.
Ah.
Sam Worthington has served as a perfunctory hero character for a few years now. Does he deserve that role, or who else could be pulling it off better?
I'm going to go with Jason Statham.
Oh.
I don't think he deserves that role. I don't think he's doing particularly well in that role. It's leaving me a little bit cold. So,
There's a serious charisma problem that I've been finding with Sam Worthington.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's just, I don't think he was the reason, you know, I didn't love it, but I think he didn't help.
Yeah.
And if you have the Stath in there, then I'm always going back to Snatch and Lock, Stock, and I'm thinking, this is good. Things are going well.
Yes.
Abe, if you had to pick a Rosamund Pike to hang out with for a day, would it be the one from Pride and Prejudice, who's a little sickly, or would it be the one from An Education, where it was a little thievy?
Ooh. Let's go with...
There's also a Rosamund Pike from Die Another Day, where she's a little frosty.
There you go.
I'm going to go with the thiefy, because the sickly, you know, you can always work to get some extra cash, but...
So you would prefer someone who steals as opposed to good-hearted?
Yeah, sickly. You know, because sickly, you know, I'm just saying. I'm going to sound like a bad guy now, which, you know, I am.
That was the goal. That was the goal all along.
I just need to add that I was going off my Die Another Day memory knowledge from, like, several years ago, thinking that Rosamund Pike's name was Frost. And I was correct. Her name was Miranda Frost in that movie.
Kudos. All right, Aaron. With Liam Neeson fending off wolves, finding his daughter in France while defeating a gang of hooligans, and being a comedian with Ricky Gervais, what would you like to see him do next?
I feel like he'd be a good time traveler.
Interesting.
I feel like if that man was, like... not necessarily, like, tried to time travel, but if he was thrown into a time traveling situation, he'd probably work himself out. Probably wouldn't do too bad for himself.
No, I think he'd pull it off.
This summer, Liam Neeson is Ender.
I may just be an 11-year-old boy, but there's aliens out there. All right, so I think we've all adequately asked each other some questions, so that's going to bring us to the end of No, Everybody, and we'll move on now to our movie trailer talk. Yeah, we got a couple of the newest movie trailers to talk about, one in particular that just came out literally hours ago, because what better day to release a trailer for a remake for a film than on April Fool's Day? So we have Total Recall, the remake of the action classic Total Recall from 1990, Paul Verhoeven's directorial featuring... former Governator Arnold Schwarzenegger, and this version now stars Colin Farrell, Kate Beckinsale, Jessica Biel, just a large amount of attractive people in a futuristic world where, of course, Colin Farrell, I guess, is a regular Joe who, I guess, discovers that he's actually a world-class super spy in the future, and he'll probably need to get his ass or otherwise to Mars at some point. So... that said, what did you guys think of this trailer? Larrabee, what did you think of this trailer?
You know, it was clean and crisp. Len Wiseman has a nice visual eye. I guess I was either concerned, happy, or sad about the camera work, and I haven't been able to figure out in my own head what I... like, it was very busy and very video gamey, but maybe that's kind of the way Total Recall needs to go to be interesting this time.
I could agree with that more than... and in Live for Your Die Hard.
Yeah. So I guess it looked better than I thought it would look, but I don't think it still doesn't look great.
Abe? Yeah, I think that I'm going to echo that sentiment, which is it looks better than I thought it would. But there was that really cool camera angle where the guys are coming to sweep in after they, I guess, beat the hell out of John Cho. And there are a lot of very hot-looking women in this movie. I think there was, like, the shot of Kate Beckinsale's butt, and I was like, wow, that looks really great. And now I'm just being misogynistic. All right.
Once again.
So I'm a thief lover and I hate women, apparently. I'm just kidding, folks. But
send your emails to outnowpodcast@gmail.com.
Finally got it right this time. it actually looks decent.
Yeah, decent's kind of the word to go around. I will say that I saw I was at Comic-Con last year. They had the panel for Total Recall. They showed basically that entire scene where the guards come in and Colin Farrell fights them all off in like one shot. They showed like a lot. That's basically the scene in the original Total Recall where Arnold Schwarzenegger suddenly discovers that he's a secret agent, except this time there's multiple guards trying to get him at the exact moment. But watching that, and it was like unfinished, but it's pretty much look how it should look. Yeah, I can see what they're going for. And yeah, I agree with Laramie where it's very busy with the camera work. And I do think it's more fitting for a film like this that's all set in the future. Like, it's like kind of the next evolution of something like Fifth Element, basically, kind of where it's going. But yeah, I approve of this kind of style, I guess, towards it more so than what Wiseman brought to like Live Free or Die Hard, which should be more of a kind of, not gritty, but kind of in your, like, this guy versus stuff, and it's tough, not slick-looking kind of mode. And, I guess watching the Total Recall trailer, it's like, all right, it's like, slick and clean, and, yeah, it looks like a high-budget studio picture, and it feels right-ish, I guess. It has, like, an interesting cat. Like, Bryan Cranston shows up at the end, and I'm like, all right, well, Walt shows up. That's always something.
Doing his chemistry.
Kate Beckinsale and Jessica Biel will probably. I think I saw them fight a little bit in that trailer, so that's never a terrible thing, I guess. Seeing women beat each other, right, Abe? Right? All right. High five.
I think I'm in too much hot water. This episode already. I'm just like
sipping. I'm curious what the rating will be because this isn't 1990/80s where Paul Verhoeven could do whatever he wants to and make it work. This is going to be the 2012. Everything needs to be sanitized in PG-13. At least it's not in 3D, right?
Yeah, that is. That's a huge win.
Yeah, it's not in 3D.
Yeah, much appreciated.
Yeah, but at the same time, we won't get a 3D shot of an alien with three breasts. So, I mean,
get ready for a surprise.
All right. Well, Total Recall hits theaters, I believe, August 3rd. Yes, August 3rd, 2012. So right after you've seen all the other amazing movies of the summer, you can go and see Total Recall. And all right, yeah, so the next trailer we're going to talk about is The Raven. And this is the John Cusack starring serial killer thriller set back at the time of Edgar Allan Poe, where John Cusack plays Edgar Allan Poe, and a serial killer is on the loose, killing people that match with Edgar Allan Poe's poems and writings and other work. And this is from James McTeague, yeah. It's from director James McTeague, who did V for Vendetta, and Ninja Assassin. That's right. And, yeah, the much loved Ninja Assassin. That's the other.
With Rain.
with Korean pop star Rain, but
my favorite Korean pop star.
He's no Taiwanese pop star like Jay Chow, but yeah.
Not that I'm
terms of Asian pop stars. But Abe, what are you thinking about The Raven?
I sincerely hope that with the casting and whoever the captain is, you know, Luke Evans, I hope that it's not really just like a dead giveaway of who the killer is. I think it looks pretty intriguing, especially like some of the cinematography, especially with like the guy who's gonna die as the clock keeps striking. That was actually pretty tense.
The pendulum
thing. I was like, oh, damn, that sucks. That's like the worst way to go. But it looks interesting. I think John Cusack he's weird, but, you know, maybe it's going to work out. So
it seems like he's trying to channel Nick Cage's hair.
Yeah, his hairline's kind of receding, yeah.
Not just hairline receding. It seems like he's trying to channel Nick Cage's hair, like in performance, too.
Yeah. Maybe this is actually originally cast with Nick Cage, but then he just couldn't do it because he's doing, like, Ghost Rider Part 3 or something.
Maybe that's a more interesting movie right there, if Nick Cage was Edgar Allan Poe.
But it looks pretty intriguing. I think that it hopefully it holds up with a pretty good plot and pretty good thrills.
My only issue was the marketing in general. Like, I think it gives away really prominent third act things, and it's like, can we not do that? But and like the killer, like I feel like that's totally been tipped now as well. And then he may have played it a little cutesy. You know, it feels a little bit like Sherlock Holmes 2, where it's like, hey, we're being cheeky now sort of feel.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm very, very hopeful. I love V for Vendetta. I liked the color palette quite a bit on this one. And I think, you know, Edgar Allan Poe, people have had a tough time adapting him, but awesome stuff if you get it right. I thought the pendulum scene looked really cool as well. Like, it was visually compelling.
I know the movie's very R-rated. That's something I do know. Like, again, this is also a Comic-Con last year, and they showed some pretty gruesome scenes in here. It's really like a... It feels like a mix. I hate mixing movies, but it feels like a mix of, like, Saw, in terms of, like, they're put into terrible traps, and John Cusack has to, like, kind of save them. And, like, something like V for Vendetta, where it's very stylistic. Like, it feels like I should be watching The Raven right before I watch Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. It feels like that would be this would be like the good opening act movie for Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. That's kind of the vibe I got. That said, I really like Sleepy Hollow. That's like one of my favorite film of mine. That's my favorite like Tim Burton film of mine. And if it was something like that, if
it looks pretty similar. Yeah.
If it had that kind of mode to it, I'd be pretty intrigued. Which also makes me think, well, if John Cusack played Edgar Allan Poe, this movie would probably make $1 billion.
It's like High Fidelity, but with death.
Yeah. Top five poems. Top five. Top five the 19th century serial killers.
Is Jack Black also in here?
Yeah,
Jack the Ripper.
Now I want to see the Walk Hard version of The Raven with Jack Black. The Raven, which I think has been pushed back a few times. I know it's been out. I think it's been out in England or in the UK area for like a month or so, but I believe it now comes out April 27th, right before it's that big push right before the Avengers, where I think like five movies come out that week.
It's always a good sign when a film is delayed.
always.
Never doubt.
I read an interesting fact just now. Jeremy Renner was originally going to star in the film, but he had to drop out for Mission Impossible. Ewan McGregor was also in talks for the role. Jeremy Renner as Edgar Allan Poe.
I think at one point, though, he was in talks for every film in Hollywood.
That's true. Yeah, he is. Since he's Bourne, he's Ethan, or whatever, he's Mission Impossible. He was probably in Total Recall.
He was going to be in Battleship, but...
Tim Riggins won the role.
He was originally Tars Tarkas and John Carter, but then he was still mad at Tim Riggins. He was Captain America. But then he's like, oh, wait, we already have a Captain America.
Am I the only one with a Chris Pine, Chris Evans mental block? Like, I cannot separate the two of them.
Chris Pine, Chris Evans? Chris Pine's forehead's too prominent for me to, like, not really confuse them.
I'm trying to give other people this mental block now. It's not a good goal, but it's a goal.
Chris Evans, I think he's tall, and I don't think Chris Pine is tall.
Yeah, that could be right.
I feel like if they were to play brothers opposite the Danny McBride Sam Worthington brothers movie as rival cops, that's a movie that I want to see. But one would have like this poster is amazing to me of this movie that I've just imagined.
That's a film I can get behind.
It would be that if Danny McBride and Sam Worthington were like in Tango and Cash Part Two or something like that, where they are brothers.
Well, it would be Part Two. It'd just be a remake of it. I mean, let's not kid ourselves here.
That'd be awesome.
Or they'd be in Brett Ratner's. Midnight Run remake.
Colin Farrell is who? That would totally work, by the way. Hollywood script agents, give me a call.
I'll see Danny McBride in Cop and a Half too. Cop Two and a Half. It featured the little kid from what's his name? Bobby something from Role Models.
He was good.
I'd watch this movie. They'd be swearing at each other. That's so, there's so many tangents. Let's move on. let's move on now. I guess we're done with trailers. Let's move on to our film review for Wrath of the Titans.
We gods are losing our power. We believed Titans to be imprisoned forever. Now? They're breaking free.
It would mean chaos. The end of the world.
What am I meant to do?
Perseus, I need your help.
This is for gods, not humans.
You will learn someday that being half human makes you stronger than a god.
That was a little bit of the trailer for Wrath of the Titans, the sequel, or follow-up, to the 2010 remake Clash of the Titans. This one also stars Sam Worthington, Liam Neeson, Ralph Fiennes, our favorite Greek triumvirate right there. And as a follow-up, this film takes place 10 years later, after the events of Clash of the Titans, where Perseus, the Kraken Slayer, is continuing to live life as a regular mortal, as a fisherman with his son. But problems are arising because Zeus and the other gods are losing their powers due to humanity no longer believing in them, and it seems like the Titans are gaining more power.
There is a calamity coming. It will affect us all, gods and men. The humans may have stopped praying to us, but there are consequences. Without prayer, we gods lose our power. When our power leaves us, all our work comes undone. If our power diminishes much further, we gods will become mortal. We will die, and Cronus himself will escape.
So this especially gives more involved when Hades and Ares make a deal with Cronos, the imprisoned king of the Titans, who's imprisoned on Tartarus. They make a pact and capture Zeus and try to, you know, get Cronos back into power. Perseus, reluctant as always, decides what the hell and sets out to try and rescue Zeus from the underworld with the help of Queen Andromeda, played by Rosamund Pike, and another demigod, played by Toby Kebbell. And, you know, Greek hilarity ensues.
Yeah, I was hoping that you would say that.
Yeah. Lots to discuss. Let's go. Laramie, what did you think of Wrath of the Titans?
I'm definitely not a fan. I think I gave the first Clash of the Titans a B- or C+, somewhere in there. I thought this was brutally bad. I thought the story didn't even try to make sense with it for me. It was just, they kept making like new rules, like, well, I'm immortal unless I get tied up and people take my power. And then it's like, our dad tried to kill us, but I'm going to help him kill you. And I don't know. There was just, for me, like the plot wasn't there. So it felt kind of aimless. And then again, I don't know how you fight a lava monster. Like in real life, I think that'd be really difficult. Clearly this is a Greek epic, so it's not real life, but they tried to make it organic and realistic. And I think they failed on all levels. Other than that, count me down as a fan.
In a word, it's very forgettable. I watched it yesterday. I really don't know what happened. I just remember that at some point, Ralph Fiennes and Liam Neeson are just being badasses by throwing all these Titans out of the way and stuff. And it's called Wrath of the Titans. You really don't see that many Titans.
That's the weird part. That trailer indicates a different premise than the film actually has.
Yeah, so like a bunch of more action.
You feel like there'd be more Titans. I feel like they just think, well, these are Greek things. they're probably Titans. Minotaur. Titan. Let's do it.
That Minotaur scene, yeah. Anything about a Minotaur is always now about
Your Highness.
Yeah, Your Highness. Yeah, it's always going to be that. But I mean, back to Wrath of the Titans. Yeah, it's forgettable. I agree with you. It's very superficial. It's very shallow in terms of like plot development. There's all these characters like Toby Kebbell. Like, he plays, I guess, the comic relief in the movie.
Rock and
yeah,
Roller.
He was great in Rock and Roll. I love that guy. More fit in Rock and Roll too, I would say. But it's just really awful at some points. I think even relationships between like the Sam Worthington and his son, and I think they actually had the part where Ralph Fiennes and Liam Neeson are just talking about, you know, forgiveness or whatever else. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. You know, if they had expanded more about this and some of the more tragic elements of their relationship with their father or whatever. But, and the other thing that I really can't get over is, why is Ares, like, why does he have a Spanish accent when everyone has, like, a British accent or anything like that?
Well, why do they all have British accents?
That's a good question, yeah.
Why does Percy have an Australian accent?
I know, I noticed that too, right off the bat.
Don't worry about Zeus. No, Zeus gets around, Dave. That's the answer to that question.
But the only thing,
when Zeus asks, we need to get all my sons together. I'm like, well, that might take a while, Zeus. I mean, you're not exactly sleeping with one woman.
He's not super fidelity, yeah. But the only saving,
he's high fidelity.
High fidelity, yeah. The only saving grace is an awesome cameo by Bubo, and that was basically it.
The original Clash of the Titans, which Abe and I and Jordan and Mr. Jim Deeds, we all talked about at length in our commentary for that movie. I don't think is great, but it's still enjoyable to an extent. And a lot of it's due to just the I'm not going to say the timelessness because it is kind of dated, but like kind of the cheesy classic version of making that kind of movie work with the stop animation. That said, when Clash of the Titans was first coming out, I was on board with the idea of that remake. It seems like that's a good idea. It's like, yeah, okay. I mean, the idea of Clash of the Titans was to kind of make a greatest hits Greek myth action movie and using basically what are considered the latest special effects possible. And so I'm like, well, if they make that again using the latest special effects technique, I mean, there's no... It seems like that's a fitting idea for a remake, I guess. I can get behind that. So I saw that one, and I was like, that was nothing. I didn't really care for that movie. It had some nice set pieces mixed with, like, just... So, yeah, I thought it was meh. And so this movie, I was a little more... I was going in with lowest expectations just because, well, it's a sequel to a movie that I didn't really like, and no one seemed to really like, even though it made, like, $500 million at the box office. And... So going in, I was like, all right, at least they don't have, like, a remake. They don't have, like, a plot to tie themselves down to. They can just do whatever they want. And walking into it and seeing it, after seeing it, I guess I kind of liked it. I had more fun with it than you guys did, apparently. But, like, I don't think it's great by any means. I can pick it apart to hell, which we're about to do. But I think I got more out of it than I was hoping to. And I can – the main things I can, I guess, respect are kind of just – kind of some of the go-for-broke actionness of it, where it just kind of it has fun just messing around with, like, putting humans into crazy CG action sequences, like seeing Perseus fight against a chimera and seeing long shots of him running side by side a CG creation and seeing it mesh well. And, like, I had fun with that, the ludicrousness of a giant lava rock monster versus Perseus and his black version of Pegasus probably voiced by Chris Rock in deleted scenes. Seeing that's kind of fun. Seeing that giant labyrinth set piece, I kind of enjoyed that, although I have some issues with how that thing functions, right. But we'll talk about it.
Yeah, the hydraulics involved had to have been amazing.
That's why you had God of Iron working Hephaestus play. I'll talk about Bill Nye in a second, too. But, I mean, overall, like, I don't think it's horrible, but I had more fun watching it than I had fun watching the first one, which I didn't really care. So there are some story elements that were introduced. Abe, you kind of brought this up with, like, Perseus and his son, and, like, the idea of, like, I guess fathers was, like, seemed like a theme that they, like, put out there, but they just didn't go into it.
They tried really hard, but
They tried really hard. They're like, well, we'll just throw some lines in here. Just, you know, try. But not really do anything with it. Because you have the idea of, like, Perseus is the son of Zeus, but he's rejecting that. Then you have his son, and he's trying to relate to his son. And then you have, like, Zeus and Hades, and I guess Poseidon, who's not in this very long. Like, they're all the son of Kronos, but it feels like there could have been more done with, like, establishing, and then Ares and his whole, like, he feels underappreciated, but we don't see anything about expanding upon that. Like, it's just kind of established that apparently Ares isn't liked by Zeus for some reason, and he's really angry with him. But nothing's done with those themes. Like, it seems like there could have been a more interesting story here if they kind of spent time fleshing those bits out.
I liken it to, like, when people are brainstorming, they're like, oh, you know, that's a great idea if we have, like, this, whatever. And then when they get to finally... like directing and acting in it, they're like, it's actually really hard to do that, so let's just cut it down to this and this and this.
Let's just
whittle it down. And it just becomes something that they think that is really cool, but it's really not. But to your point about the, you know, whole entire relationship between the fathers and sons, I mean, I really didn't care too much for it. It was kind of like something that would have been nice if they, you know, I guess explained a little more.
I'm saying I didn't care for it.
To the point about the giant labyrinth, it was a cool concept. You know, it's like this moving giant tower that you have to go into to go into Tartarus, and they are only there for like 2 minutes. And I was like, wow, this is kind of weird because they get lost along the way. And I was like, oh, this is gonna be interesting. They're gonna actually get lost, and there's like millions of ways to get there. But all of a sudden, it's like he just takes Rosamund Pike's face and turns it to the left, and it's like, we're here, surprise. It's just everything is just so superficial that it just was full of nothing. That's not to say I didn't have fun.
Other than that,
it feels. I mean, because when you first see that labyrinth scene, like, it shows Hephaestus he's his map for the labyrinth, and you see this giant thing that leads all the way up to Tartarus. It's like, oh man, this is gonna take like a year to get through with our little map. That for some reason we have a map that charts the exact path to the lab. That doesn't work at all. But they get inside the labyrinth. They take, like, two wrong turns, and then Perseus, like, falls away, and he fights a Minotaur,
shanks the Minotaur with his own horn, and then, like, that's it. Like, then the labyrinth morphs, and it's like, oh, well, I guess choosing option B, fight a Minotaur, was the way to solve the labyrinth a lot quicker than fully exploring it.
And, you know, the other thing about that labyrinth, there was this part where Rosamund Pike, I guess Queen Andromeda. Yeah, she's like, oh, we're not alone in here. I was like, oh, I'm actually kind of spooked. There's, like, something in there that's, you know, a shapeshifter or something like that. But that's not explored at all.
It's just one Minotaur. Yeah. he was making shadow puppets.
That's exactly what I was thinking, yeah.
Shadow puppets. There's that scene late in the movie where you have Neeson and Ralph Fiennes, like, basically just godding out.
Yeah, yeah. I enjoyed that.
They're getting some as gods. And they're just...
It was like Wild Hogs, but with god stuff.
Like, I really, again, I had fun with this movie, and I wish it embraced this campiness more. Like, I almost wish this was, like, more like A Knight's Tale, where you have, like, you put in, like, modern rock, like, I mean, the trailers try to be like a Knight's Tale, they put in their own rock music, like, you might as well just have, like, classic rock songs mixed with Neeson and Ralph Fiennes, just like, and I guess Poseidon, if he didn't die so early on, Danny Houston, like, just rocking out his gods and, like, throwing fireballs and lightning balls and water balls, I guess. All around as, like, you know, Boys Are Back in Town is playing or some AC/DC tracks going on. That's a movie I wish I could have seen more of. I wish I could have seen more of this campy movie. Like, with the first Clash of the Titans, one of the reasons I really didn't care for it that much is I think it was too serious. I think it had some kind of fun at points, but I think it took itself too seriously. This one, I feel like it tried to have more comedic elements. It was very self-referential in a way. Like, I think Bill Nye almost spoils this movie completely by being Bill Nye and not playing, like, a person that exists in this time period. Like, he comes in, he literally, like, acknowledges the last movie where he says, release the Kraken that. Yeah. Like,
and that was, like, a nice chuckle moment.
It was a chuckle moment, but it's like, what movie is Bill Nye, like, in right now? Like, he's doing the snorting thing. Like, he's playing Bill Nye. Like, he's not doing anything else.
He's playing a weird character from Love Actually. Yeah, like that coked out rock star.
Where he's very aware that he's doing this movie.
Yeah. I don't know. What can I say? And, you know, about Bill Nye, there was, like, the cool part about the Cyclops. Cyclopses, which goes nowhere.
James Marsden.
Yeah, you know, you have three James Marsden, an old and two young, and that really goes nowhere. It could have been like this awesome battle fight, but it just becomes like this predator move.
It does. Like, you really think, well, what the Cyclopses, the James Marsdens, they really kind of go away after you first meet them, like. You get them, you fight them, and then they kind of like, all right, well, I guess we'll take you to our leader. And then you don't see them again, especially in the wake of the world's possibly ending. You think you'd want to have more people in. By the way, what's going on in that battle scene? Where is everyone else? Like, apparently humanity is about to die, right? That's what I'm
saying.
Like, Kronos has gathered his power, he erupts from a volcano, and you have, like, three flanks. And let's see, the first flank is led by the guy who was trying to steal things, Toby Kebbell. And then the second flank is just, like, a handful of guys. And then, like, Queen Andromeda, the queen, is, like, the leader of the third, like, the last group of people. And so that amounts to, like, 500 people there. Where's Greece? Where's Hercules? Where's everyone? I don't know the time. It's pretty fast and loose of Greek mythology. So, like, is Perseus the only demigod that can match up to this thing?
Apparently so.
They could definitely only manage, like, 20 people. It was like a skeleton crew of, like, look, we got to fight off this rock monster. You, me, and a couple of friends, let's head down there, see what happens, see what develops. I also like that they tied up, you know, at the end of the first one, he finds himself a love interest that they had to get rid of for contractual reasons. So within the first 30 seconds, like, well, how do... She's dead.
Yeah.
So there's a grave. That, good enough. Okay, so I don't remember the first one clearly enough. Maybe you guys could explain this to me. But so Io, I believe, was her name, played by Gemma Arterton. Now, was she a human in that movie, or wasn't she like some kind of spirit god or muse or something in the first movie?
No idea. I didn't watch it.
She has some special powers, I think, but she dies and she gets brought back to life by Zeus. So he's like, I don't want you to live alone. Here you go. Kind of thing. And like,
that's your reward for Kraken slaying.
Yeah, like that's the end of the film, though. Like, that's what it ends on. And then 4 seconds later, it's like, hey, Dad.
So don't watch this movie in succession.
Yeah.
So you'll be really upset with the use of Gemma Arterton.
Back to back might be a little rough.
She dies, then she dies again. Mm-hmm. It's humorous to me that the first movie basically had two love interests, and they really cash in on both of them throughout the series.
It's very strange, yeah.
Okay, yeah, especially because Alexa Dolablos, I believe, played Andromeda in the first film, and she didn't come back either. Rosamund Pike plays her character in this film. So not a lot of the women don't seem to want to be a part of this series. So it's like a Greek myth Bond girl situation, I guess, is what we're going for. With the of the Titans franchise that we're setting up here. What would the third one be called?
What's Flash of the Titans.
Clash, Wrath, Flash. Yeah, it makes sense.
Bash of the Titans, where they have like a high school reunion.
Smash of the Titans, where they all just get drunk.
Smash of the Titans.
Where they try out for a Broadway musical.
Smash the Titans. Yeah, Cher could be Hera. And, you know, okay, so that's the other, like, theme that I thought was interesting but went nowhere. The gods are dying because people don't believe in them anymore. I think there's a lot that could be explored in that kind of movie.
Yeah, and that's a great point that you bring up because that's a really interesting thing. And when he goes up to the...
Times are evolving, and, you know, and things are... Like a movie like Beowulf does something like that where they introduce Christianity in the background, and I think that's handled better than this movie is here.
Beowulf.
Are you the one they call Beowulf?
Okay, Sam Worthington in this movie. He has quite... I guess we're giving up on him doing an American accent in movies. I think we've established this now.
I think you also mentioned that when he was on Man on a Ledge, it just goes back into being Australian accent.
Yeah, as you know here... He's the son of the great god Poseidon.
Your new boyfriend is clearly insane.
I'm your cousin, as you know. I'm the son of Zeus. Half god. I'm abandoned just like you. If my father sent you, I want nothing to do with you. Your father's dead. Gods don't die. They do now.
Yeah, whenever he's angry, it seems he's very Australian. That's what I've noticed. But this movie didn't seem like he's even trying. It seemed like they were, like, I don't know where they filmed it, so I'm just going to assume New Zealand. And so it feels like maybe he just kind of took a plane over, and they just, you know, he just kind of went with it. He didn't really go for the British old-fashioned-y Greek accent, and he didn't really try for an American accent. He just kind of went, look, I'm going to do this. I don't feel like having the Jason Statham hair buzz again. So I'm just going to leave the mullet going. Like, it seemed like Man on the Ledge was filmed on breaks between Wrath of the Titans. Just like Mickey Rourke apparently filmed Iron Man 2 and Expendables back-to-back because he had the same look there.
What can I say? Sam Worthington? Yeah, I think that it's just... I don't know. You know how sometimes I'm just saying people are serviceable? It's like, in this one, it's just like, you can just find somebody else. You could just done better with, I don't know, some other dude.
Yeah, anyone.
It's like, he's just really not giving a crap. It's not to say that I don't think he's trying hard. It's just more of like, there's really nothing there for him at all. It's just, this should have just been straight to DVD. I think we would have watched that. Just like Scorpion King 3.
I don't know. There's something to be said for the scale of this movie. I think that's I did admire, like, the scale of the action. Like, I feel like there's a lot of shots of just wide shots of things happening. Like, not even just, like, Kronos as a giant lava rock monster, but I think there's a lot of... They really kind of put, opposed to the first film, which I feel was a bit more claustrophobic, perhaps. I feel like this one at least tried to set the camera out. You know, I should mention, this is this last week was our 50th anniversary episode, and this week is our Jonathan Liebsman anniversary, because our first episode was Battle LA, and this is his new film now.
Whoa.
So there you go. A year later, we're now talking about his, yeah. I mean, the movie has kind of a mix, I guess, of showing things happening from a wide angle, from a big scale, down to like dirty grittiness that he tried to have in Battle LA, which is a movie I feel like we felt the exact same way about Battle LA that we feel about this movie.
Full of nothing.
Where it's like, forgettable, nothing. Yeah,
you're the bravest Marine I know. My friend was just like rolling his eyes.
But anything else?
A plus.
Yeah, right. I mean, Wrath of Titans, again, I feel like I'm coming away, even though I can pick it apart to death, I feel like I'm coming away more positive than than the two of you. I think there's.
I mean, there's something to say about it. It's fun to some degree with some of the jokes and some of the action sequences, but for the most part, I mean, like, as a whole, it's not really worth that much of your time. Even though it's a pretty short movie, I think.
Yeah, it comes in at an epic 90 minutes without credits. Did you guys see it in 3D?
I did.
Yeah.
I'll say this, because the first movie has the reputation for being the laughing stock of post-converted 3D. I feel like this one tried a little bit harder, maybe.
There still weren't any, like, 3D-specific shots, but yeah.
There was one. There was one where the chimera, like, the snake tail, like, jumped.
Oh, yeah.
And there was some, like, what, like, I guess, lava monster, rocks, or... You know what? There's a lot of lava in this movie, by the way, too. And there's not a lot of people getting injured by lava. I just noticed that quite a bit throughout.
You know, like, when he pounds his fists into the ground... like Kronos, and you know, Zeus is deflecting it. Like, wouldn't it just kill everybody who's on the field right there? Like, you just shockwave would just go. Bloof. Or is Zeus like deflecting it from everyone?
Abe, how did the shockwave go?
It goes.
If that was your dad, why would you save him?
Who are Ares? Or what's his face?
Zeus?
No, Kronos was, Zeus and Hades'
right,
papa.
Yeah, and then Zeus had put him down, I guess, because he was being a bastard.
Well, yeah, they put all the Titans down and locked away in Tartarus, and for whatever reason, I guess some kind of pact was made between Hades, Ares, and Kronos.
Oh, well, the pact was, like, to have immortality, because they didn't want to be forgotten, Hades would make a pact with Kronos and be like, all right, I'll give you Zeus's power, and I'll just forever be immortal.
But Kronos didn't seem to be that well-spoken, so, like, how did he get that deal across?
He's, like, mumbling.
I'm curious about that, too. I was waiting for James Earl Jones to take the voice at some point.
Or Megatron.
But, Hugo Weaving or James Earl Jones, they're interchangeable. Yeah, I wasn't too sure what Kronos' endgame was, or what Hades' endgame was, besides living long. I was happy that Hades' hairline just seemed to not be, like, terrible, like the first movie did, where it seemed like he was, like, a leper. But in this movie, it seemed like he had, like, those are some beards in this movie, by the way. Our ending thoughts. Any other notes I have in this one? Let's see. Yeah, no other gods to speak of here. We had
they're all dead.
A couple, they all died off apparently. Yeah.
Come on, God. So yesterday, anecdote, topical. I'm at the Emerald City Comic Con doing the 12 most anticipated films of 2012.
Yes.
And they were the AV guy was like testing the mic before I went on, and he was a very soft-spoken gentleman. And so people from the back started shouting like, "We can't hear you! We can't hear you!" So I get on the mic and I do what I always do in that situation. I go, "This is God." And to the audience's credit, one dude shouted out, "Where have you been all this time?" And I had no comeback. Later, I thought I was, stuck in Topeka. That would have been pretty good.
Stuck in Topeka, yeah.
Pretty good line by him. Where have you been? Just been, sorry, my bad. Been gone.
I'm curious, for 12 most anticipated films, what's like the top three?
Well, of course, Dark Knight.
Yeah.
I, strangely enough, have Looper at number 3.
I have that pretty high myself.
I'm very excited about Looper.
I saw the trailer for it at WonderCon a couple weeks ago. It looks It looks quite promising. I believe it's going to be released online this week.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Too.
Nice.
Yeah.
I just think Ryan Johnson's really, really talented.
Yeah,
yes, for sure.
Like, Brothers Bloom to me was crazy underrated. Like, I really like
Brothers. Yeah, I was really sad that it didn't catch up. That didn't take on as much as Brick did. And, I mean, that's it. I love Brick a lot, too. So.
Yeah, I love Brick. And then my number 2 was Django Unchained.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Tarantino.
Cool. So, pretty chalky, but...
Was that an article or anything, or...?
No, I didn't...
Just like a panel kind of thing?
Yeah, just a panel.
I was saying that was an article because I could link it in the show notes, perhaps, if it was or something. But...
No, it was just me being an idiot on stage.
Topeka, Kansas.
I'm excited to hear more about... Yeah, we'll talk about Looper next week, I feel
awesome.
Like.
Awesome, yeah, because I remember when you mentioned the trailer coming out in April, I was like, oh, man, I can't wait, because I'm a big fan of Ryan Johnson as well.
And it's very, like, I'll just say now, the trailer doesn't give away a plot, is that it just gives away a premise, really. So that's kind of the best kind of trailer. So,
agreed.
Cool. Yeah. All right, so getting back to our thoughts on Wrath of the Titans, the much-loved March Madness movie. let's see, we'll just get to it more, I guess, instead of because of. So, let's just go to our rating. each week on Out Now, we try to rate our movies based on when you should go and see them, as opposed to kind of a letter or a thumbs up kind of grade. So we have a scale that goes from IMAX to theater to dollar theater to Netflix, HBO, TV, or just kind of forget about it. So Laramie, on that scale, where would you kind of put this movie?
I'm going to go all the way to forget about it. Sorry about that.
Forget about it.
Yeah.
Abe.
I went to with the TV on this one, just regular TV. Not even FX.
Not even FX. You're waiting for the ABC family broadcast.
Yeah, just like, yeah. Where it's like trimmed down to like an hour.
Not even like DVD on TV on
FX?
No,
not even that.
See how they made a Lava Rock
that
monster.
You'd actually have to spend time watching and be like, oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. This is just sort of like, yeah, I'm doing laundry. Oh, it's on.
Yeah, I'll go a little bit higher, and I'll say Netflix so you can get that Blu-ray. Look at it in pristine vision. Just because it's nice enough looking for me. But yeah, it's not a great movie. I wish this movie could be done right. Like, I feel like there's a great Greek epic god movie that's just over the top and silly that's there to be made that's also, you know, good. But what we have is what we have right now, I guess. So there we go. And Abe, I did text you too when I was about to see the movie.
You're like, in 2D.
I was like, it's in 2D! Exclamation point! And then apparently they forgot that it was in 3D because at the last minute they came up with the boxes of glasses. Like, oh, it's in 3D, guys, here you go. So that was a bit irritating. I was like, oh, good, it's going to be very bright. Oh, side note to that, when I was watching Tintin today, I had the 3D Blu-ray because we have a 3D TV, and I was really impressed with how good the 3D TV is. It was as good as a theatrical experience, which I've heard before that 3D at home is actually pretty solid compared to converted movies in theaters. So, but yeah, I'm excited to watch Hugo that way as well. Again, because I can't watch that movie enough. But okay, so yeah, that's our Wrath of the Titans. Well, yeah, let's go over the box office this week for it. Then Abe, do you remember what you predicted last week?
I think I went high. I went 50. First place 50.
Yeah, you went first in 50. Jordan went first in 43. Liz went first in 49. I went a little bit higher because I did not think about how much Hunger Games would continue
to be out
of
people's systems.
Nope. I went first to 55. But yeah, the film came in second place. And clearly they also remembered Clash of the Titans because it came with $34 million.
Wow.
Second place, 34. Hunger Games came in at the top of the box with 61. Everyone's Laramie, did you see Mirror Mirror by chance?
Yeah, I like Mirror Mirror.
Oh, yeah? You like
it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, we've been not anticipating Mirror Mirror for quite some time. Here's a curious. Did you like Immortals?
I did. Yeah.
I found Immortals to be enjoyable, too.
I like Tarsem quite a bit. I think he's really strong.
Yeah, I liked I obviously like his visual sensibilities, and I liked The Fall quite a bit, and I liked The Cell a lot of it. And yeah, the Immortals, I wish I had more fun with Immortals, but I did like Immortals overall. But seeing every time I saw the trailer for Mirror Mirror, I was so dissuaded by seeing it, so I did not go out and see Mirror Mirror.
Yeah, it's much, much better than the trailer suggests, because I agree the marketing
has
been terrible.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I heard that the lines Snow Way and Say Hello to My Little Friend are not in the movie.
Agreed, they're not.
30 a plus.
Yeah.
So that adds to it. that adds to me wanting to see it right there.
Yeah, I would have given it a B or B minus, and I would say probably see it in theaters if you can, because his visuals are so big. For the record, I do predict box office at Rope of Silicon, and I had Hunger Games first and Wrath of the Titans second. But
yeah, I think I pressured Jordan into going for first place.
I predicted it too high, though. I had Wrath at 48, which clearly it didn't get near.
10 over. Yeah.
Mirror Mirror came in third place of 19. 21 Jump Street, still making money, because that movie's quite good. Did you like 21 Jump Street?
I definitely liked the first half. I thought the second half was a little slow, but overall, like, I'm looking forward to a sequel, and I'd recommend it, you know?
And The Lorax is still making money for whatever reason.
How'd our buddy John Carter do?
John Carter. Oh god, John. Wow, that's a significant jump too. John Carter. Lorax has $8 million in fifth place. John Carter has $2 million in sixth place. Like that, there's a large disparity between the two of them. But yeah, John Carter is still. Worldwide, it's made back its budget.
Its budget though, but not like marketing and advertising.
Well, no one really technically knows how much it costs overall to produce and market, except Disney.
They've said they're going to lose $200 million on it, though.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Which is a lot.
That's a lot, yeah. That's someone got fired.
You'd rather not lose that if you could.
Yeah, you'd rather want to say, Disney made $200 million just because, opposed to, not doing. Yeah, that's basically all that matters. Salmon fishing in the Yemen.
Yeah, it did pretty well for limited theaters.
Yeah. Act of Valor is still making money.
And made for like 12 cents.
1,000 Words, Eddie Murphy, not 0% talking.
0% on the tomato meter.
And Journey 2, The Mysterious Island.
Ugh.
And then Project X.
Still out, yeah.
But yeah, all right, so that's all that. Let's move on. Let's move on to Instead of Because Of, you should watch this, formerly known as Retro Review. And this is where we discuss a couple films that relate to our main feature of the week. And we kind of talk about some films that relate, that are, you know, we'd watch because of Wrath of the Titans or instead of Wrath of the Titans. And I have a few in mind, but Abe, how about you start this one?
Instead of Wrath of the Titans, I would say watch the 80s Clash of the Titans, because Bubo has a more prominent role in that one, and he's way more fun. And then, because of Wrath of the Titans, I thought of Transformers 2, because that's like when they're pulling Megatron up from the sea, and they've got to put them all back together and stuff, and it just reminded me a lot of Kronos. So, yeah.
Wrath of the Fallen.
Wrath of the Fallen, yeah, exactly. Minus all the racism and stuff.
I don't know. Let's see. Was there any racism in Wrath of the Titans? Let me think here.
I don't think so. At least not that.
Can't put my finger on it. They hated multi-limbed characters a lot.
That's and funny. The Titans, which, you know, I don't know what that could be construed as.
All right. Laramie, any movies come to mind?
You know, we cribbed it a little bit, but Immortals, I would say, instead of, I think Immortals is a much better version of the epic Greek god Delio. And, you know, handles it with almost more and less reverence at the same time. Like, certain parts are just big and silly, and other parts are have a little more character development to them. So Immortals, to me, is a far superior film. And I thought of, especially during the ending scenes with the rock monster, I thought of 300, just for how much better, you know, clearly that battle scene is, and how they took a limited amount of people, 300, and made it seem much, much cooler than the couple dozen that Wrath of the Titans used against there. And there just didn't seem to be any strategy, or just like, line up here, this will be the first defense where we sit in mud. And so it didn't make any sense compared to like the over the top craziness of 300, which visually is, you know, quite cool.
I completely
and
agree.
Then, yeah, and then also technically looked a lot cooler. So
yeah. Okay, so here's my main instead of that I thought of. Aladdin came to mind, and I'll explain exactly why. When Bill Nye comes on, it feels just like when Genie gets introduced into Aladdin, where the opening parts of Aladdin are, you know, it's fun, it's, you know, it's a musical Disney comedy, and it's, you know, but it's set in an environment that, you know, doesn't call attention to itself. And I think Wrath of the Titans kind of does the same thing until you get to Bill Nye's character, where he's suddenly making callbacks to, like, the first Clash of the Titans and acting like a character from, like, a 60s English comedy who happens to be in Wrath of the Titans. The same way Genie is introduced to Aladdin, and suddenly the reality's gone, and you have all these pop culture references going on in that movie. That's the exact comparison I thought of for Wrath of the Titans.
Thank you, Disney.
My other one was God of War, which is the same thing I could have said for Clash of the Titans as well, the video game series God of War. I did play that instead of Wrath of the Titans. I've been playing God of War for the past couple of days because I wanted to, because I enjoy that. And in a video game series, that has a more compelling story and characters than either Clash of the Titans or Wrath of the Titans do.
Way better.
Yeah.
Way better character development out of that. And, like, they start so cool in the original God of War.
Yeah, they just throw you in.
It starts out so dark and so impressive. You're like, oh, this is badass. Yeah, that's a great game.
Like, I'm playing the last one that was on PSP. Now it's on PS3. I'm getting so geeky about it. But Ghost of Sparta. And in Clash of the Titans, it takes you an hour and 30 minutes to get to the Kraken. In Ghost of Sparta, it takes you 2 minutes, and suddenly a giant Kraken's already fighting you. Like, it throws you right in. It knows what it's doing. And it still makes time for developing the character of Kratos, the lead character of God of War. So, yeah, that came to mind. And Jason and the Argonauts, I thought of that. Because of all these kind of god-crazy Greek epic movies, not counting something like 300, because that's more or less based in a different kind of reality. There's no kind of
Well, I guess there's over the top and some creature stuff, but I mean, in terms of having like godlike creature, god creatures and stuff, Jason the Argonauts is kind of the movie I go back to. I really like that movie. I really like watching that movie.
How about Young Hercules? Do you like that one?
Disney's no, Hercules. Young
Hercules. with Which Ryan Gosling. Like, I love Fox Kids. I'm just being facetious.
I feel like you've made mention of this before.
Young Hercules is awesome.
Young Hercules.
But anyway.
Because I haven't seen Young Hercules, but I'm trying to like I feel like you've called attention to Young Hercules before. What about Disney's Hercules?
That was good. I like that one.
That's a sweet Hydra fight sequence.
They've got some great
sequence.
Music in there.
It does.
With yeah, Meg being in love, that was great.
Danny DeVito playing a Danny DeVito shaped character
with the hairline too.
With yeah. Lawrence. What about Percy Jackson versus the
I
Lightning Thief
that.
In the Olympians?
Is that pretty good? Or is that all right?
It's all right. I give it a Netflix.
Okay.
I give it a, if it comes on ABC Family after the Harry Potter marathon, you could watch Percy. If it's a Chris Columbus marathon where you watch Harry Potter 1 and 2 and Percy Jackson, like, not a bad way to do things. Okay. It has Pierce Brosnan as a centaur.
As a centaur? Really?
Yeah, the most awkward-looking centaur possible. Laramie, did you see Percy Jackson?
I didn't see Percy Jackson.
You know what? It's not okay. Bad for what it is. Like, for being, because that's another, like, children's book yeah. series, I believe, yeah. And for what it has a pretty solid cast. Like, it has Sean Bean as Poseidon.
Does he die?
And well,
that'd be sad if he died.
He doesn't. Okay, I don't believe he dies. I don't recall him dying. I have to take stock in what Sean Bean dies in. I think I'm pretty sure that's a site. What Sean Bean dies in .tumblr.com or something like that. But I mean, it has like Steve Coogan as Hades and Rosario Dawson as Persephone. Like, it has a lot of just like fun casting choices. Where it's not bad. It has the kid that plays D'Artagnan in the Paul W.S. Anderson Three Musketeers movie plays Percy Jackson.
Yeah.
All of this happens.
Sounds fun.
But, I mean, it's more fun than I thought it would be, like for that kind of movie. It's more fun than other book-based epic movies like I Am Number 4 or whatever, Aragon. Well, yes.
Or Goosebumps.
That's a lot of time we spent on Percy Goosebumps.
Those are fun.
Okay, so let's move on to a little bit of game time, I think. I think we have time for games.
I think that we do have time for games.
Yeah, that'll have to do. That'll have to do for my impromptu games opening theme song. So, yeah, we're going to do some games. Laramie, we have this game that we've been doing for the past couple weeks where I have an app on my phone called the Movie History App. And it literally lists things that happen today in film history. And so I'm going to kind of go over some of these facts and just come up with offhand questions for you and Abe to try and answer. And the first of three wins.
I must preface this by saying that I am terrible at this game.
All right.
Okay. So here's the first one. And it's April Fool's Day. I'll just remind everyone of this. But that doesn't mean that there will be trick questions. Okay. I guess I'll say that. Just to preface it. Okay. Barry Sonnenfeld was born April 1st, 1953. He is the director of films such as Men in Black, Wild Wild West, RV, and Men in Black 2. But what significant job did he get his start with?
McDonald's.
Hair cutting.
None? Neither way? Okay. You
don't know.
In terms of other films that he's worked on, not as a director.
Pornography.
Key Grip.
Okay, I figured one of you might know this. Okay, Barry Sonnenfeld was a cinematographer in early Cullen movies.
Ah,
that was my next
like Miller's Crossing, Barton Fink. He was early on. He was working with the Cullens.
I should have known that.
Okay, let's see. Okay, here we go. Here's an obscure one. April 1st, 1982. Sam Huntington was born.
False.
True.
Can someone name a film that Sam Huntington's been in?
The one movie... I do not know without cheating.
I feel like if you had a face in front of you, that might help.
Oh, really? I'm gonna look up his face. Is that okay? Is that cheating?
That's fine. Sam Huntington.
Huntington. All right.
I feel like he's like small enough of an actor, but like you might...
Guy? I have no idea. I know that he's on that weird show where he's dead or something like that on Sci-Fi.
Yeah, that's Being
Human.
Okay,
yeah.
The American version of Being Human. Okay, he was Jimmy Olsen in Supernatural.
Jimmy.
He was also in that Fanboys movie.
I didn't watch that.
And I believe he's in Not Another Teen movie.
Oh, he is! He's one of the three group geeks. Oh, yeah.
and he's in a Detroit Rock City,
which I did not see.
We might both get to zero here.
Yeah.
Next one wins then.
Okay, here. Okay, I have. Okay, April 1st, 2005. A popular comic book series is turned into a film and released in theaters. It's directed by a certain Robert Rodriguez.
Oh, that's Sin City.
There's
boom.
I'm literally running out of film facts. So now I have to ask. Here's a first for the show. I'm gonna turn to the day before to make Woo-hoo! Questions. Okay, here I got a perfect one right here. March 31st, 1943. This actor was born in Queens, New York, New York.
De Niro, Pacino.
I'm about to elaborate on this one. He has starred in. How do I best phrase this question? This actor is known for having a very particular way of speaking, and he also is known for...
Christopher Walken.
There you go. Okay. Before I just continue to bullshit my way through that question.
Okay. So I says to the guy...
Two mice. Ball and a bucket of cream. Okay, last one. Just because I'm trying. Okay. 1971, March 31st. This actor was born in Scotland and starred in a popular trilogy.
Ewan McGregor.
That is correct.
Woohoo! Trilogy being the Star Wars trilogy.
Woohoo! Yes. I'm curious what the other trilogy you were thinking.
Well, I got the part B of the question. Yeah, it's Trainspotting 1, 2, and 3.
All right.
Congratulations, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Glad I've gone through this impromptu contest once again. Maybe I should better prepare some of these questions sometimes. I love filling time. But all right, so yeah, that's good. So let's move on then. Let's just talk about what we're gonna talk about next week, Abe. I think we're gonna talk about the Raid.
Boom!
The Raid Redemption for you Americans.
Right.
But yeah, but next week we have the release of Titanic in 3D and American Reunion. I feel like we should talk about the Raid.
I think it deserves some good airtime.
I've just seen it a second time, so clearly I hated the movie. So Abe and I will argue profusely about it. Laramie, have you seen The Raid yet?
Not yet. No, I need to.
Yeah, I think it's be spreading wider and wider over the next few weeks. So it's
It looks good.
Certainly one to catch, and certainly one to I don't know, have water with you, because my friend was sweating while he was watching some of the actions.
Weak.
But yeah, and for those who aren't familiar, The Raid is an Indonesian action film that has a lot of crazy action in it, and it's worth checking out if you're able to, you know, go and see it before you dedicated listeners listen to the next podcast. So, with that said, because The Raid's not hitting wide in theaters, I think we'll predict the box office for American Reunion.
Just
try that one out. And I guess since we have Laramie on with us, it might be a little helpful, just like when we have Scott Mendelson on with us, he tends to have a little... Well, no, Scott's more of a... He's more of an after-the-fact box office guy. Laramie, I think you actually predict box office, so...
I do. So let's see here. American Pie opened at 18 million. American Pie 2, 45. Yeah. You got to think the nostalgia level is fairly high here.
Yeah, you got all the gang back together and Tara Reid.
So I'm going to go as high as... Man, this is a tough one. I'm going to say 38.
38.
Yeah. I still think it's a little below 2, just because that was more of a summer film, and this is a tougher time at the box office. So,
yeah, that's. You say that you think it's going to be first place.
I think it would be at 38. Yeah.
I think the Hunger Games will die down by that time.
Well, it bled a lot more than I thought it would this weekend. Right. Yeah, so I think that'll be lucky to hit 30. It looks like.
I'm gonna undercut Laramie a little bit, because I was gonna say 38, but I'll say 37 first place.
Okay, 37. All right. I think you guys are kind of high. I'm not sure. What did Wedding make?
American Wedding opened at 33, and made 104. Domestically, of course.
You know, I'm gonna go with that one then. I don't think it's gonna be performed like a wedding. It seems fitting to me.
That was 2003, though. It's been a long time.
It's been a long time, but it's like R-rated comedy like this with these people. Now, I guess we'll see. I'm curious to see how well
the people who snuck in to go see these are now old enough to actually just go see them.
Yeah.
So you're going to go with 33?
I'm going to go with 33, yeah. I'm going to go with that in first place. Because Hunger Games is still out. Might be pretty close.
Pretty hungry.
Yeah. Are you going to see American Reunion, Abe? Do you have any kind of anticipation?
I really don't have any anticipation. I mean, I caught some of them when they were on, like, USA, maybe, like, in college. But, yeah, I haven't really seen them, you know, I'm not really excited about them either. If it was Harold and Kumar Part 4, yeah, I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to go see it.
Well, Abe, I mean, the writers, directors of this movie are the guys that created Harold and Kumar.
That being said, I like Harold and Kumar a lot better.
Well, it does have John Cho in it as MILF guy number 2, I believe.
I remember that from the casting credit, and I was like, what? John Cho? Anyway, but I won't go see it.
Laramie, do you have any anticipation for the next American movie?
Yeah, I'm seeing it Tuesday. I guess I'm looking forward to it, nostalgia's sake. I don't know.
Yeah.
I like Sean William Scott quite a bit.
I do, too.
He's out in Goon.
I want to see Goon, actually. I gotta rent that on demand and watch it. Actually, you know, what I like about Sean William Scott is playing a character like Stifler in those movies, he's still somehow been able to branch himself away from that role.
Yeah.
I find that impressive. I feel like he hasn't played Stifler throughout his career.
Yeah.
He was really funny in
Role
Models.
Yeah, he was getting Role Models.
You know, and he's more of the straight man, like Paul Rudd's more of the comedic point than Sean William Scott is, and he's still like really funny in that movie, I would say, I think.
He was good in The Rundown.
You know what movie I like him in? I like him in Southland Tales, actually. For a movie that I know is like hated by many people, it's like very mixed in hate. I think Sean William Scott's actually really good in Southland Tales.
I thought you were gonna say the one with Chow Yun Fat
in a duel. Oh god, no. Bulletproof
that was Monk. Cool. Jesus. He learns his kung fu through like watching movies. Anyway,
bulletproof Monk. Why would you do that?
I like Chow Yun Fat.
All right. Well, yeah. Okay. So box office, though, we'll see. We'll see how American Reunion does. American Pie not presents with Eugene Levy actually an American movie again. Right. Yeah. I'm just thinking of the 8 different sequels of American Pie that were all directed to DVD that all had Eugene Levy in it and like some relative of Stifler. I think that's how they actually play out. Moving on. I guess that's going to do it. Take us to the end. That's going to do it this week for Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work at my personal blog site, thecodeofzeke.com, where you can find all my written movie reviews, as well as at whysoblue.com for Blu-ray reviews and other reviews and things from there, including, I guess, all my past WonderCon coverage and things such as that. You can also find me at twitter.com/AaronsPS3.
You can find more fun stuff at walrusmoose.blogspot.com, two animals, walrusmoose.blogspot.com, and twitter.com/walrusmoose.
And Laramie.
At film.com, of course, on ropeofsilicon.com, our Brad Laramie on Movies podcast on iTunes, and at Twitter, LAREMY.
Awesome. You can find all the other episodes of Out Now, of course, on iTunes, on hhwlod.com. You can check out our show there, as well as the other shows that are on that network, including the Walking Dead TV podcast and Legion of Dudes, just a bunch of fun podcasts about games and comics and stuff. Really cool guys over there. And you can find most of the newest episodes at outnow.podomatic.com and a few exclusives. And, of course, email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. I think we had some fun answering our question tonight because we just never really get that to happen. So feel free to email more, things like that. And, you know, of course, praise Laramie for managing to make do with my terrible use of the movie history app game. And, of course, make fun of Abe for whatever reason you feel like. And, of course, Facebook.com/OutNowPodcast. Feel free to like our page. I guess we have that
new
timeline.
Yeah, we're on the new timeline thing. It's admittedly makes it a little bit more difficult to keep track of.
Yeah, but, yeah, it's still there, and we like posting stuff on the Facebook page. So, yeah, go for it. And, of course, our new Twitter handle, twitter.com/OutNow_podcast. So there.
Boom.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so next week we're going to talk about The Raid. That should be fun. Laramie, thanks for coming on today.
Much obliged. Had a blast.
Great, yeah, and always nice adding more guests to the Out Now family as we have it. So, yeah, and okay. So until next time, so
and
long.
Goodbye.
You guys aren't big on Beverly Cleary. I see. See what kind of show this is.
Bastards.